Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, my first guest today is an author. She's Anna Mitchell, and her book is Just Don't Call Me Mom. I'll introduce her in just a moment. But coming up around 12:20, we're joined by four very creative Northwest writers, Garth Stein, Rebecca Hooks, Jenny Shortridge, and Barty Kirchner. They're each very successful in their own right, have written a lot of books between them. And today they're joining me to talk about the future of the publishing world and how they're giving back to our community right here in the Northwest. They have a great organization that they started up a couple of years ago, and they'll be telling us about that. But first, I'm pleased to welcome Anna Mitchell. She says on her website, "Call me a writer, call me a 30-something know-it-all, just don't call me Mom." And that's the name of her new book. She talks about how she ditched the South, forgot her manners, and managed to survive her 20s with most of her dignity still intact. Anna Mitchell, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I loved the intro to the book, Anna. I was just saying, I loved your grandmother. What a character. You're talking with your grandmother, and she snaps at you, "Do not call me Mom. It took me long enough to feel like a grown-up, and Mom makes me feel old." So tell us a little bit about why you called the book this.
I think that there, when you're in the South, you grow up with the idea of calling everyone ma'am. And it's just sort of a sign of respect, I guess. And then when I moved up north, I just realized that all of a sudden people were getting offended by me saying that. And I realized, well, yes, it can be a little bit offensive. You're trying to push somebody into this age bracket that maybe they don't necessarily feel like they need to be in. You know, they're still young and having fun. And so a term like that may not necessarily need to be what you use. And then when I moved back to the South and started having people call me ma'am at just 28 and 29, I was like, this is a little bit early. And so just kind of put my foot down about not wanting that.
I remember the first time I was called ma'am too. And I was like, what? Who, me?
I know, you're looking over your shoulder, like wondering who they're talking to. But yeah, they're trying to talk to you. So
I know. So tell us a little bit about your background, Anna. You worked in copywriting for a while. You say that working with ad agencies is one of the only ways that you can travel across America and have a new job on your resume every couple of years without looking like a convict. tell us a little bit about your background.
Yes, well, I did. I worked in ad agencies in Boston, and then when I lived in Seattle, mm-hmm. and I wrote copy for Starbucks there, and then I moved back to New York and worked in an ad agency there and then in Denver. So basically, the whole time I was writing fiction and nonfiction on the side and paying the bills by creating ads for different companies.
And you say that writing this book, Just Don't Call Me Mom, was your sanity during that period of time, really?
Absolutely. You know, you write so many words for the companies and you're trying to sell their products, and it starts to feel a little bit, a little soulless at times, you know. And but at least with writing the book, I could know that I was writing about something that I cared about, believed in 100% and could stand behind.
Yeah. So why did you write this book?
I lived in all these places and in my 20s, and I met all these fabulous women who were close friends and coworkers, and we were all trying to make a go of it and building these independent lives, and everyone was really struggling with the same issues around, you know, family and relationships and how all these pieces fit together. And I'd had this idea that when I left the South, it would be like this big city, Sex in the City kind of fairy tale, you know, where you go and all of a sudden you're transformed into this wonderful urban creature. And it just wasn't quite that neat around the edges. And so I felt like I wanted to write a book and just talk about that experience and how figuring it out could be kind of messy along the way, and that was okay. Because growing up in the South, you know, everything's always very neat and prim and proper, and you don't really talk about your problems as much. And I felt like there were some problems to be discussed.
Yeah, you did touch on a lot of really prevalent ones. I actually read that you started writing to meet men.
Yes, well, I wasn't having luck in any of the other more traditional methods. So I thought, hey, hanging out with my computer in some coffee shops might be a good way.
But that didn't work either, right?
No, that also was not very successful.
So
in the end, I met a man who lives on a cattle ranch. So I guess you just never really know how that's going to work out for you.
There you go. You talk about reinvention a lot. You talk about the myth of reinvention. You kind of touched on that earlier when you pick yourself up, you take yourself off to a new place, you think everything's going to be hunky-dory, but here you are, you're still with yourself, right?
Exactly. Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah, and at the end of all of your traveling, because you spent this time traveling, as you said, and you write about some of the places you stayed at and some of the people you met, at the end of it all, you found out that by going home to Texas in this little town of 30 people, you actually had come home and were where you needed to be after all.
Exactly, and I think that it kind of took me looking in all these different places. I thought that I was going to find this city that suddenly perfectly matched my personality, you know, or that I could just take myself to one of these new places and kind of meld into what was going on, as opposed to realizing that family and friends were a huge part of what I was leaving behind. And for me, my final equation, that just wasn't going to work out.
Mm. Some of the issues you looked at were, do I listen to the feminists? Do I listen to the Betty Crockers? What kind of conclusions did you come up to at the end of this journey?
After trying to listen to pretty much everybody out there, I guess I just kind of tried to follow a lot of different templates, you know, and one of those was the you can just kind of do everything and be this superwoman kind of thing. And then I realized that here I was trying to be the superwoman, and I didn't even really want the end product of that. Like, I didn't even really want to be some major domestic diva that could cook everything in the kitchen. That's not really who I am. And so in the end, I've been trying more lately to just pick and choose of what actually makes me happy, but that can be hard when you have all the outside influences coming in.
Yeah. So tell us about your adventure in Seattle. How did you like Seattle while you lived here?
No, I loved it. I only got to be there for a little bit over a year, but I lived down in Belltown, and there's a couple of stories that have to do with my time there in the book, one in which I almost, in trying to be a Betty Crocker, almost burned down set off the fire alarm in the apartment complex where I lived and had the whole thing evacuated.
So you're very familiar with our fire department here, right?
Yes, unfortunately. I should come to a little signing for them there. I owe them a little bit of apology. But yes, I really enjoyed my time there. And, you know, the Pacific Northwest is so different than where I'd grown up in the South. And I met so many great people, and it opened my eyes to a lot of, I guess, more liberal points of view that I've brought back with me to the South.
Yeah, interesting. You say through all your travels, state lines don't seem to change the struggle. We all seem to have the same kind of struggles. Party lines don't make a dent in the debates. What did you learn most about yourself while you were traveling around?
I think that the thing that I learned the most is that I didn't really have to be put into a little box about being a woman. And that sounds kind of generic and a little bit cliche, but essentially I didn't really have to go fill all of these roles, like being a great cook or being number one around the house or things that I, you know, had in the back of my mind from just the surroundings where I was raised, that I could actually pretty much do anything that I wanted and do the pick and choosing and have that work out okay in the end.
It was really quite adventurous of you because if you come from that small town of 30 people, it's quite a shock coming to a major city, right?
Well, the small town is where I've ended up, but I grew up in a whole smattering of towns like kind of across Texas and Oklahoma. But yes, they were all very different than the big cities I explored in my 20s. And I guess I just was very courageous because now when I look back on it, I'm very surprised I made that first move to Boston. But once it got started, it just didn't really stop.
Don't you find, though, the adrenaline kind of carries you through? Because, I mean, I've moved to several new places where I didn't, you know, really know what I was going into. But the adrenaline kind of carries you through for a while, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And there's something really fun about going through and finding, you know, what your new coffee shop's going to be or where you're going to get your Thai takeout. And you do all that. But eventually, I just found that getting to know the new cities wasn't necessarily giving me, like, the more permanent feeling of happiness that I wanted to get.
Right. I want to share a story about your grandmother in here. Well, you were talking about how she said that, well, let me just say what she said. It took her 70 years, but she finally figured out how to get the dimensions of Dolly Parton. And she said, it was really easy. I learned to do a handstand. Tell us a little bit about your grandmother. I'm guessing that's where you got some of your sense of humor from, because there's some very funny lines in the book.
Yeah, I'd be very lucky to have her full sense of humor. She's pretty amazing. She lived in a very, very small town in East Texas and has lived there for as long as I've been alive, and really just enjoys her peace and her quiet. And so she spends a lot of time, I think, in her own head, and then you go up there and she just has these one-liners that she delivers that'll just pretty much leave you on the floor laughing.
I would have liked to have seen that. So during your travels, did you find what you thought you were looking for? Did you even know what you were looking for when you were traveling?
No, I don't think I had any idea what I was looking for. I think I just, I wanted the new adventure and I wanted to find a place that felt like home. And so I think that in the end, you know, I ended up back home and that's the right place for me to be. But, you know, every time I moved to a new city, I did have that hope that maybe that time when I unpacked the boxes, it would be the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't meant to be that way. But now I have this experience of having lived all across the country and met all these people, and my friends are pretty far flung, and so I think that gives a good sense of balance to now me being back in such a small town.
Right.
It gives me a little bit more equilibrium.
Right. You dedicated the book to your mother because she said she let you go without letting you go, something like that, words to that effect. For my mother who let me leave without letting me go, we have to let you go now, unfortunately. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Just the idea that you can go out and you can have a great day wherever you are. You're not limited by your zip code.
Not limited by your zip code, yeah. And then you might have a great book to write as well. The book is called Just Don't Call Me Mom, How I Ditched the South, Forgot My Manners, and Managed to Survive My 20s with most of my dignity still intact. Anna, where can listeners find out more about you?
There's information on my website. It's annamitchell.com, and it's spelled M-I-T-C-H-A-E-L. And that's really the best place to go. You can find out all about the book and a little bit more about me and what I do now, and get connected to my blog, The Happiness Project blog.
Yeah, it's very good. A good read. Thanks for being with us, Anna. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And my guest again, Anna Mitchell, and Mitchell is spelt with a T in the middle there. It's like Michael, but with a T in front of the C-H. And the book again, Just Don't Call Me Mom. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined with four Pacific Northwest authors.
Hardly certain of my role, and then I started searching for my soul again. But there was nothing I could find.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Most of us have nights where we toss and turn, but did you know that for some families, certain forms of insomnia can be deadly? Vicky talks to DT Maxx about his latest work with National Geographic and the secrets of sleep. That's coming next Monday at noon Pacific on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
When I was a boy, 12
And welcome back, welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And in this segment, I'm joined by four authors, all of from the Pacific Northwest. And I'm not going to introduce them. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. Garth Stein, why don't we start with you? Welcome back to the show. We've talked with you before.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
And you are famous for...
Famous is a loose term in this case. I have written three novels. My latest is The Art of Racing in the Rain, which is narrated by a dog and has sort of been my big book of note. But I also have Raven Stole the Moon and How Evan Broke His Head and Other Secrets.
Okay, very good. And then we have Barty Kirchner.
I have written 8 books, 4 cookbooks, and 4 novels, and my latest novel is called Pastries. It's a novel, actually. It's not a cookbook. I also do a lot of magazine articles, essays, and book reviews, and so forth.
Okay, very good. And then Jenny Shortridge.
Hi. My latest book is called When She Flew. It's my 4th novel, and I'm working on another one.
Okay, very good. And Rebecca Hoogs, last but not least.
Thank you. I am a writer. I'm a poet. I'm not a part of the Seattle 7, but we'll talk more about why I'm here, I believe, later. I'm a poet. I have a chapbook called Grenade, and I'm also the director of education programs for Seattle Arts and Lectures.
Okay, very good. So since you brought up Seattle 7, why don't we start there? And I believe that Jenny and Garth started this foundation, this organization. So who would like to kick off us and tell us a little bit about Jenny Wood?
Garth is pointing at Jenny.
So tell us a little bit about how this got started. I guess you guys were meeting for coffee and beleaguering the labors of the writer.
The trials and travails of being a writer in Seattle. You know, it's such a tough life. When I first moved to Seattle, I knew very few people, but early on I met Garth Stein, who is a lovely, lovely chap, as you no doubt can tell. And we would get together for coffee and talk about our writing lives. And one by one, other authors started to join us on pretty much a monthly basis. At some point, we realized, well, we have a really dynamic, amazing group here. And we thought, well, we can also use our powers for good in the community, as well as helping each other with the things that we need to do. You know, things like promote our books, help each other just by supporting each other through this kind of a career. And we decided to go out into the community and see what we could do.
And you called this Seattle 7, but when I was doing a little research, I read an article by Brandon Davis who said the first thing we need to know about the Seattle 7 is they're actually the Seattle 9.
Actually, that is very true, yes.
It's a number that's in flux. Initially, we had 7 kind of main members, and it went up to 10 and 9. The idea is that, you know, we need to be adaptable as a group, and that, you know, sometimes you have a deadline or you have to be on the road touring, and it's just too much to have to worry and have this commitment. So we're very loose about sabbaticals and hiatuses and new people joining on. So it's always in flux. And in fact, if we have kind of a new dimension, which is we have a core group and then we have the expanded Friends of the Seattle 7. So I think at this point we're at 23, if I'm not
That's
mistaken.
That's correct. We're at 23, so Seattle 7.
But Seattle 23 just does not sound cool.
No. And you based this on you had a reason for calling it Seattle 7 in the beginning.
We did. Garth is evading that one. I think everybody remembers The Big Lebowski, and the dude in The Big Lebowski was actually based on a character who was in Seattle during the time of the protests against the Vietnam War and the Chicago 7. Well, there was a group in Seattle that was also protesting and arrested, and the dude was one of them. So we just kind of like that whole idea.
And so we've heard from two of the founders of Seattle 7. So, Barty, how did you become involved in Seattle 7?
I actually read an article in Seattle Times about Seattle 7, and I immediately got interested because I have always done a lot of volunteer work for the local writers and artists organizations, such as Pacific Northwest Writers Conference and Artist Trust. So I was very interested because since I have done a lot of volunteer work and I felt this would be a good place in a good group for me to be in. Also because in Seattle, we never had a literary organization of this sort. My mystery writer friends have their own club, their own audience, so does the science fiction writers. But there's nothing, anything like this for literary writers. So I felt very excited, and I immediately sent off an email to Garth and Jenny saying that, oh, I want to be part of it. And they included me in the core group, so which I'm very proud of, very excited to be part of it.
Yeah, that's where I know your face from, from the Pacific Northwest Writers. I used to be on the board of directors a few years ago. And Rebecca, how did you become involved in this?
Well, last fall, I got a voicemail from Garth, and he said, or an email, and he said, we have this group, and we've decided that we'd like to do some outreach, and we've picked WITS as our first organization that we'd like to support. And how does that sound to you? Could we do that? And I said, yes, please. We would love to have an organization that is working and talking on behalf of writers in the schools. So I immediately took them up on their offer.
So tell us what WITS stands for.
WITS stands for Writers in the Schools, and Writers in the Schools is a program of Seattle Arts and Lectures. Many people are familiar with our Literary Arts Lecture Series, where we bring authors and speakers to Benaroya Hall for talks. We have Atul Gawande actually speaking tonight at Benaroya Hall. And Writers in the Schools is our outreach program, our education program. This year we are placing local professional creative writers with 21 different sites in the region. We work with public elementary, middle, and high schools, and we also work at Children's Hospital, and we're also this year working on the Lummi Native Reservation beyond Bellingham.
Awesome, awesome. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with our four Pacific Northwest authors and find out more about what they want to do with Seattle and why they're here today to introduce this to our listeners. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune in to our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm joined in this segment by four Pacific Northwest authors, all very successful in their own right, all multi-published. But they've banded together. They've formed this great organization called Seattle 7, and they're trying to give back to the community through this organization. So we heard a little bit about the organization and how it got formed. I'd like to look now at some of the upcoming plans.
And who's going to give me a nod there and decide?
I'll jump in.
You jump in, Garth.
Kind of our basic mission is to promote a love for the written word. And really to do that, we want to support literacy causes as much as we can in the Northwest. And by literacy causes, we're championing WITS for this year, which is sort of in fundraising efforts as well as in bringing awareness to the WITS program is really what we're after. But we're also trying to foster a collaboration between bookstores, libraries, writers, and audiences in order to sort of create a dialogue around writing. You know, writing is a very solitary thing, and reading is a solitary thing, but the fun of it comes out, I think, and the vibrancy comes out when there's discussion about it. And in that discussion, we can, you know, really explore what's so wonderful about the written word. So we do this in a number of different ways. We have library initiatives, creating pocket libraries in unusual places, teen shelters. We're starting to work with women's prisons programs to get books to them. We do panel discussions in bookstores, not just about specific books, but about larger issues to try and bring an audience in. We just did a literary luncheon to raise money for WITS directly. And this fall, we have a couple of really exciting things coming up. We have a book fair that we're going to do on Finney Ridge in November, just before Christmas.
Oh, good.
And proceeds for that will benefit WITS. And we also have kind of a very exciting Still Under Wraps event, which you will hear more about come October for Arts Crush, which is this great arts festival month.
And in case anyone just joined us, WITS is Writers in the Schools. My guests are Garth Stein, Jenny Shortridge, Barty Kirchner, and Rebecca Hooks. How does somebody get involved in this? If let's say, I'm sure we have somebody out there who is an author themselves and they'd like to become involved, how do they get involved in this?
Well, we happen to have a very handy-dandy website that people can find us through, and that is www.seattle7writers.org. And we have email available through that website as well, so people can send us emails. And everyone can. We would love to invite people who are looking to have some kind of event and would like authors at that event and are willing to let it be a fundraiser, because that is one of our missions, is we only do things when we can raise money. So we'd love to do bookstore events, outside-the-box events, all kinds of things. So we really encourage people to contact us and also to get on our mailing list. So just by emailing us.
And you guys do all of this as a volunteer, on a volunteer basis?
Yeah, our objective is to help our communities, and it's not about, for us, money in any way. I mean, we're trying to, in fact, bring in some outside partners to even increase our fundraising abilities to a greater extent.
So let's talk a little bit about publishing, where you see publishing going. And before the end of the show, we will give out the website, so we'll leave time to do that. Barty, how many books did you say you'd written?
I have published 8 books.
And so are you concerned about where you see publishing going because of the way everything is changing?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, the e-publishing, which is good and bad. E-publishing is great for certain fields of writing, which are not us. For example, the computer field and the scientific fields. It's great for them to have e-publishing because they can make changes rapidly. But for writers like us, novelists and generally nonfiction writers, e-publishing, one of the problems with it is that the royalties are going to be very low. Two of my novels are already e-published because my publisher had all rights to my novel. So they e-published them. I didn't even know that. I just happened to be browsing on the internet and saw the e-books. And so I realized they have been out for some time. But that's not all. I think it's a field, it's an industry that's going in a direction we don't know much about. Major publishers are having reorganizations. They are laying off people. So what I see happening in future and what's being predicted is that there will be a rise of small publishers. And that's sort of exciting because small publishers will be springing up all over. They will be publishing quality books, I hope. And they will have a community of readers who will sustain them. So that's one of the positive things that are coming out of this particular point in time.
Right. Anybody else have a different view on that? Because I can't see myself reading off a Kindle. I think they're wonderful. They're incredible, but it's not for me.
And I think that most people of our generation, or of a generation that's not the young generation at this moment, have a hard time imagining a world without paper books, without pages, without tactile response when you read a book, and without being able to flip through it and all of those things. But we have to remember that just like every other entertainment industry in our time, things are changing, viewers are changing. As the young people get older, they're used to looking at screens for everything that they do. I think books will be around for a good long time. I think that they might become more niche. You know, they might become something that's maybe, I'm talking way out there, you know,
right,
something that, you know, now the kids are buying LPs again all of a sudden, you know. So I just think that we need to be prepared for what's coming and embrace it.
I think we can't hide, you know, stick our heads in the sand. I mean,
it's here.
And I actually, I confiscated my 13-year-old son's Kindle for the last book trip I did, and I really liked it.
So, blasphemy.
Well, you know, here's the thing, though. If I'm going away on a trip on an airplane where I'm taking 4, 5, 6 flights, I carry one little deal. I have as many books as I want. I used to have a bag full of books. It just was frustrating. And I think that, you know, people are going to find the medium that they want to get the delivery of the material in. Once you start reading the book, you're kind of caught up into it. I don't think it's that much of a different experience. You're still reading the words. You're still getting, communicating with the writer. But, you know, there's a sorting process right now. There's a little pushing and pulling. There's the Google and there's Amazon. All the big powerhouses are playing, and just, you know, to slice up the pie. And one thing I do know for sure is that the authors will not get a piece of the pie. So we just might as well give it up now.
So what's your incentive for staying in the business?
No, it's still because I look upon myself as a storyteller, and regardless of what I'm writing, whether it's a magazine article or an essay or a fiction or a novel, I'm writing a story. And it's my hope is that stories will not go away. The format will change. There will be new technology, but the stories will always be needed. Right now, I'm researching for a historical novel set in 17th century, although I'm researching a little more than that. And I found that in the 17th century, there weren't that many books. Books are kind of looked, people respected books, and they looked up to it, but there weren't that many books. Then in 18th century, the new print technology came about. And at that point, also, people had money to spare, so they could buy books. So the books started to get popular then. But it was a new technology, it's a new print technology. So it's the same thing in the same way right now. We're seeing new technology.
And they were probably cursing it back then.
Exactly. It was scary back then.
I just noticed, Rebecca, I wanted to, you are putting together a summer creative writing program in Rome. How fun is that?
It's very fun. Yeah, one of my side jobs is as the co-director of the creative writing program in Rome through the University of Washington. We take about 25 students over to Rome each summer and immerse them in Rome and in writing, a sort of writing boot camp for a month. We have everybody from students who've never written before to graduate students who are really practiced in their art already. And we walk around the city and we write in response to it.
Wow, very lovely. Do you have a set agenda or...?
We do, and we have a schedule that varies a little bit each year based upon has worked well in past years. And we go to all the big sites and have assignments, and we're writing on the fly in the site, as so many artists and painters have gone to Rome for decades, or, you know, for hundreds of years to respond to the city. It's our own grand tour, in essence.
And is it writers of any level? You might have already said that.
Yes, writers of any level. Yeah. Most of them are undergraduates and graduates of the University of Washington.
Mm. Okay, so let's take a quick look at self-publishing. This is another thing that I know many authors have very strong opinions about. Some are for it and some are against it. Who'd like to kick off here?
That's a tricky one. I mean, there are two ways of looking at it, I think, that, you know, in a sense, agents and editors act as gatekeepers of quality writing sometimes. So in that sense, in the traditional sense of looking at self-publishing, people would say, well, if you couldn't get it through the gates, then then maybe it's not good enough. But we know we've seen enough times that that's just not necessarily true.
Right.
And with the new technologies now, especially the famous espresso book machine, they have one at Third Place Books. And I heard they may have one now at U Books.
Yes, I've heard that as well.
Yeah, and they have one at Village Books up in Bellingham. And I've had a book made for me because I wanted to see the technology work. And it's a gigantic machine behind plexiglass, and it prints up the pages and the cover, and it stamps it. And
wow, I'm behind the loop here. I did not know about that. You can just go into one of those bookstores and
So you could self-publish your own book. You can format and then have it printed up individually or in groups by an espresso book machine, or out of print books can be re-enlivened. I was like, what's
reprinted?
Read something or other.
We're writers. We know these words.
Where's my computer?
Grab a thesaurus.
Which is really great, because especially in terms of like professors, perhaps like at the University of Washington, maybe they have a book that they use or have written and mm-hmm. it's no longer in circulation. They can now assign it to their students. So it's really a tremendous thing, and it is very fun technology too.
Is this something you would consider doing yourselves? Or
I wouldn't, but this is what I'm hearing will happen in future, that the big publishers will expect the authors to be co-publishers. In other words, authors will be expected to do, for example, their own cover design, and they will have to take part in promotion, which we already do, but it'll go much beyond that. So the authors will become sort of like self-publishers, co-publishers with the big publishers. Mm-hmm. And that's the way the industry is going, where the work will be offloaded to authors to a certain mm-hmm. extent.
Jenny, you have something to add to that?
I just think that one of the issues around self-publishing that people don't really understand when they think, oh, I'll just self-publish a book since I can't get it published through regular routes, is that you must become a small business that knows every facet of the business. You must become the distributor, the designer, the warehouse where you store the books, the printer. You must do every single thing. And that is really a lot to bite off. And if you have, you know, if you have all the time in the world and all the money in the world, maybe it will be successful. But it's very difficult, actually, to self-publish. And I think some people don't really realize that.
Mm, the distribution is the major factor, isn't it?
It's very difficult, yeah. Because most places won't review a book that's self-published. Most, you know, outlets, newspapers, etc. And many bookstores won't stock self-published books. So it's difficult.
Let's take a look, since you brought up marketing, the kind of things that you have to do as well-established authors. I mean, none of you are novices. You're all very well-established authors. What kind of things goes into marketing your work, marketing yourself?
Well, as much as we all probably hate to say it, I'll jump back in here. It's very much like the rest of the world in that we create a brand identity. You work very hard on having a good presence online, out in the world, through bookstores, in media, and those kinds of things. And a lot of that, some people's publishers help them with, and a lot of it, some authors don't get that kind of help. So it's really beyond, for the bottom level authors, they might get their books reviewed through the publishers, and then they have to do everything else, go to the bookstores and set all that up. Publishers who are authors who are doing a little better might have those tours set up for them and get paid to go do them. It kind of varies, but basically we need to be out in the world as much as we can.
Right, right.
Speaking of the world, we have to look upon ourselves as world writers, because our books, sometimes my books get translated and that's fine and goes to other countries, but even beyond that, the English versions of our books often reach parts of the world we never think of. And that's because most countries don't have big publishing industries, and they're dependent on American books. So in a way, we're world writers. I happened to be traveling through Singapore one time, and not very long ago, and I stopped at their national library. It's a beautiful big building, and I got into their online card catalog, and I found that they had some of my novels and many, many copies of that. So I asked the librarian, I said, how did you get my books? But they said, we're on the web. We read book reviews. We know who's writing what. We go into the book review databases. So we know exactly what's going on in the American publishing scene, and we get your books. So that was really a surprise for me.
Hmm. Garth, you have something to add?
I once got a fortune cookie. and it said, "He who has a thing to sell and goes and whispers in a well is not as apt to get the dollars as he who climbs a tree and hollers."
So that about sums up your marketing tag, your marketing strategy.
I mean, I think that this is all, again, back to the Seattle 7. This is part of why we're doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, we're not getting paid and we don't expect to and we don't want to. But we are, getting our names out there by doing things for other people. It's, it's not a completely selfless idea. I think that one has to, as a writer, recognize that it's a business, and you have to market yourself as well as write your material. And my job as a writer is not to just write the books. My job is to get people to read the books. So I need to put in a lot of effort in order to make that happen and to reach the audiences and to do whatever it takes in this day and age: book clubs, internet stuff, radio shows, whatever it takes to reach out to people.
Right, you're doing something right. You've been on the New York Times bestseller list for almost a year now, apart from writing a great book. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Barty Kirchner, Rebecca Hooks, Garth Stein, and Jenny Shortridge. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Looking for new ways to find light, love, healing, and balance in your life, your family, and your work? You're not alone. I'm Jeanette Dames, host of The Soul's Edge, Tuesdays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And I want to help you bring your life back to life. Listen to nourish your life or call for an angel reading. Join me on The Soul's Edge, Tuesdays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. If you have comments or questions on any of our shows, we want to hear from you. Email info@conversationslive.net, call Vicki toll-free at 800-495-7617, that's 800-495-7617, or leave a message at our special listener voicemail box, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
How many songs do you have that have book in them?
I don't know, but if there's a million, Eric will find every single one of them.
That's my theme song right there. Every day I write that book.
Well, you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. I'm talking with Jenny Shortridge, Barty Kirchner, Rebecca Hooks, and Garth Stein, all very successful Pacific Northwest writers. I want to get to Rebecca Hooks in just a moment to talk about what's coming up there. But Garth, I want to find out how I get to ride in a Ferrari with Patrick Dempsey first.
Really funny thing going on. Patrick Dempsey is turning The Art of Racing in the Rain into a film, and he's working. He also races. He's a great race car driver, and he works with Don Kitch out of Pacific Raceways, Performance Racing School. And Don Kitch has a program called Team Seattle that every year races these really super race cars in these big races to raise money for Children's Hospital. And so he's gotten Patrick Dempsey to come up next week, next Monday on the 10th. And for $1,000 a head, you get dinner and you get a couple of hot laps in a Ferrari with Patrick Dempsey.
Now, define hot laps.
How hot are they?
Keep your hands to yourself at all times. No, it should be a fun event. I'm going to be down there signing books and stuff like that. So if you go to teamseattle.com, any of the high rollers out there can learn more about it.
Okay, teamseattle.com. All right, so let's go to Rebecca Hoogs and find out what. Tell us what's happening in your neck of the woods.
Coming up later in May, May 26th and 27th, we have the culmination of the Writers in the Schools program. All year long, we have writers in schools working with children to inspire them to write their own original poems and short stories and memoirs. And at the end of the year, we culminate this by asking each writer to choose two young students from their school to represent their school and to read their amazing creative writing. The writers introduce their students, the students read. We have about 100 or 200 people there cheering them on and applauding this amazing writing. And in that moment, they really become the authors that they are in their heart, and everybody sees them as authors, and it's an amazing moment. So we have two readings, May 26th and 27th. The elementary and middle school students will read the first night, May 26th, and high school students will read the second night on the 27th. Both readings are at the Seattle Public Library, and both are at 6 p.m., and they're free. And I hope everybody out there will come and cheer on these amazing young writers.
Okay, so give us the times again.
6 p.m. on May 26th and 27th.
Okay.
Seattle Public Library.
Okay. Talking of libraries, let's segue into that since we are all writers and we need to do a good paragraph transition here, right? where do you see the focus of libraries heading? Do you see, I'm sure you have close affiliations with libraries as authors. Do you see any change in the way that libraries are managing their job? We do, but we're thinking about it.
I think that libraries are all in a tough situation right now, especially with this economy and with the changing technologies. But, you know, this is sort of, again, goes back to the Seattle 7 of, you know, at some point we could phase writers out. We could, you know, in other words, we need to, as writers, make ourselves relevant to our communities. And we feel that by going out and supporting literacy programs, we therefore become now necessary a part of our communities. In the same way that independent bookstores have had to reinvent themselves to become relevant to their communities, and in the same way that library systems have reinvented themselves. You know, libraries aren't just about, you know, getting books. Libraries are about a free internet access for people who don't have internet. And, you know, in this day and age, we think everybody's got the internet. Well, everybody doesn't. And sometimes you need a place to go to fill out a job application. And libraries provide this service. They provide, a format for conversation. There are learning programs. There are all sorts of programs that libraries provide, as well as being able to check out books. So I don't see libraries going away as long as we as a society and as a culture recognize the value of them to our communities and make sure that they stay around.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have?
I'd like to add something about independent bookstores. Just like Garth mentioned, that they have to reinvent themselves. I have seen a good model of that, and that happens to be a bookstore called Book Passage in Marin County, California. How they are unique is that they not only have readings, which most independent bookstores do, but they have writing classes, they have language classes, they have writers' conferences, they have author events. So they have become a place where writers, readers, and the general public can get together. And they have been, and it's not a big bookstore, it's a small store, but they have been very successful. So I think the independent bookstores also have to do more than just sell books or do readings. They have to do more of the community type of activities.
Yeah, I know you're all very passionate about independent bookstores. What would you like to say about building community? I know, Garth, when you and I talked, or Jenny maybe, we talked before the show about building community through the bookstores.
That's right. And just like Barty was mentioning in San Francisco, here in Seattle we have so many wonderful independent booksellers. One in particular, Third Place Books, has indeed done something where they created the third place. If work is one of your places and home is the other, we all need a third place, and it's really a community place. So this is what booksellers in our community do for us, and the more we support them, the more that they're able to do that. And every independent bookseller that I know in this whole Northwest area is very much a part of that and trying to do that and create ways for people to have that. But we have to go there, too. You know, we have to buy our books there. We have to take not the easy road and hit the Amazon button all the time. Or
Not that there's anything wrong with Amazon,
but I'm just saying that we need to support as many different ways of getting books as we can, which is what I try to do. I try to go to every coffee shop in Seattle. I also try to buy books from as many different sources as I can because we need to spread the wealth. And we need to get those local booksellers. They need to be lucrative enough to stay in business, and it's really important.
Yeah, and you know, when I'm traveling, I always go try to find some small little bookstore somewhere because you often find books that you just don't see elsewhere. I actually, when I was in Boston, found a storybook that I had as a child, which, I mean, I haven't seen that in, I won't tell you how many years.
Can I add something here?
Sure.
Speaking of bookstores, one thing I try to do in my own small way to promote reading is that I give books as gifts. And most of the time that works really well because people are happy to get books. One time I gave a book to somebody who didn't read at all, but I still gave her a book. And she told me later on that just out of embarrassment, she read the book. Because she felt she'll run into me and she'll have to say something. But she enjoyed it. So, you know, this is how you can kind of sneak in a book here and there and make people read.
Well, and we are nearing the end of the show. So I want to give everybody just an opportunity to say what they would like listeners to take away with them today. Rebecca, why don't we start with you, Rebecca Hoogs?
Great. Well, I'd like to say a couple of things. You know, I hope listeners will come hear our amazing student readers later this month. But if you're a writer out there and you're interested in becoming involved in the Writers in the Schools program, we do pay our local professional creative writers to go into the schools and do this work. So we're looking for those folks, and our annual application period is coming up. Applications will be due in early August. You can go to our website, lectures.org, to learn more about the Writers in the Schools program and the process for becoming involved. And if you are a teacher or a principal or a parent out there and you're thinking this sounds like a great program to bring to my school, please also go to our website to learn more about how to do that. We are accepting applications for next year's Writers in the Schools program. We do have some openings, and I'd love to talk with folks who are interested in bringing the power of language and literacy into their classroom through the power of a real live writer.
Okay, sounds good. And Jenny Shortridge.
Well, of course, I want everyone to read my book, When She Flew, before it becomes a major motion picture someday, maybe. But also,
it has been optioned.
It's been optioned, and I'm very excited. But more than that right now, I hope people will come to Seattle7Writers.org and see what we're all about. Sign up, get on our mailing list so that you can come to future events, which are always a blast and fun. And I also would really like to encourage everyone out there to do your part in your community and through whatever volunteerism that you can find that you enjoy.
Very good. Bhati Kachna.
Someone once said that every time I read a book, I feel like I'm falling in love. So that's what I want everyone to do. Read a book, fall in love.
Well, that sounds good. And Gothstein?
I guess I would have to quote Enzo and say, your car goes where your eyes go. So, you know, we...
And Enzo is your character.
Enzo is a character in The Art of Racing in the Rain. And we really do have to, you know, look at our communities and look at the society that's around us and what kind of environment we want to live in and who we want to get our products from and how we want to sustain our main streets and our local community centers and so forth. And I really think that, you know, these are we should all take steps, whatever steps we can take in this regard. You know, our phrase at Seattle 7 Writers is read local, because we have so many brilliant writers in the Northwest. We would love it if everyone read nothing but Northwest writers, but we'll take whatever we can get. So.
Tell us a little bit about the book fest that is coming up, since you're talking about Northwest.
Oh, the Arts Crush?
Yeah.
Arts Crush is kind of a neat program that was started as a theater week, a live theater week, which is basically they would kind of give away free tickets to the theater program from different theaters, would give away free tickets to fill their theaters and to introduce new audiences to their programs. It's been expanded this year to an Arts Month. So there's theater, music, and literature is the second week. There's dance, and then there's
visual arts.
So Seattle 7 Writers is getting heavily involved with the Literary Week. There's going to be a big kickoff party on Sunday, October 9th, place to be determined. And we have this this little special thing we're cooking up, and it's going to blow everyone's mind. I'm telling you, it's going to be one first ever event, and I really can't say anything more about it until we get our commitments all fixed. But soon there will be an announcement.
You're just trying to create intrigue there.
Stay tuned to Seattle7Writers.org. That's all I can tell you.
All right. So what do you hope comes from today's discussion? Big question. In 30 seconds.
I hope people will get involved in the Writers in the Schools program. I mean, I think I'm so grateful to the Seattle 7 for their outreach, for talking about WITS, for raising money for WITS. We are a nonprofit, and we need every dollar and every good word. So I'm really grateful to the Seattle 7 for spreading the word about Writers in the Schools. And I hope more people will learn about this organization from today. So go to lectures.org.
All right. Thank you so much. And your website, again, is seattle7.org.
Yes.
Seattle7writers.org.
Okay. I knew I'd get it wrong. Seattle7writers.org. Okay. Well, I want to thank each of you for being with us today. Jenny Shortridge, Barty Kirchner, Rebecca Hooks, and Garth Stein. Thanks all so much for being with us and sharing your insights. And I wish you the best with Seattle7writers.org. I think it's a tremendous organization. You're doing great work.
Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you for inviting us.
And I want to thank you for listening in today. If you have any questions on today's show or feedback, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617, or you can email me at info@conversationslive.net. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.